This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
My name's Nicole and I'm from Brisbane in Australia. I was sick and tired of feeling sick and tired and had just begun yet another attempt at a non-drinking stint when I discovered the Over the Influence podcasts. The timing couldn't have been better. I binge listened to them all, joined the OTI community and have never looked back. If, like me, you've tried and tried to put down the plonk, but even after some success, keep finding yourself pulled back into the mire, join us in the OTI community, where we all share our stories of what works and what doesn't and where we're currently at. Everyone's just so full of understanding and inspiration. In a few weeks, I'll reach a whole year without a single drop, and I can't thank the OTI community enough. You guys rock and make all the difference in the booze-free world.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Hello, and thank you as always for listening to Over the Influence. Today's guest is Adam Smith, a former bar manager turned life coach, and we really hope you enjoy listening to our conversation. At one point, we do talk about suicide, and we just wanted to let you know now so it doesn't catch you out later on. Of course, if anything you hear in this episode does affect you, then you can find links to support resources both in the show notes and on our website, overtheinfluence.co.uk.
This is Over the Influence. We are the best alcohol-free podcast in the world. I can say that because it's true. We are bloody wonderful. It's an absolute joy to be doing this. It started... Don't shake your head, Ben. It's all true.
We're great we are.
We're just great we are.
What you mean is that in the Apple chart, for health and fitness chart, we are regularly the biggest alcohol-free podcast
That's what I meant.
In the world.
Yeah. That's awesome. Exactly what I meant. Thank you very much. If you are just joining us for the first time, where on earth have you been? We've been doing this now for more than 18 months. We started during lockdown and hands down, it has been one of the best things we have ever done. Before we introduce this evening's guest, let me quickly reintroduce ourselves. My name is Sharon Hartley. Don't call me Sharon, call me Shaz, call me Shazza. I have just celebrated my fourth alcohol-free birthday. I think it was the best birthday I have ever had. I have been booze-free for 3 years and a couple of months now. I was a daily drinker, been drinking probably since the age of 16, 17, 18, thoroughly enjoyed it through my 20s, ramped it up and found excuses through my 30s, and then it bit me on my arse in my 40s, and I thought, nah, need to change this. Had a break for 90 days, and I'm still on that break, 3 years, X amount of months later. It is the gift that just keeps on giving, and we will not stop singing about sobriety. I do not do this on my own. Joining us in the future is my very tanned and glammed co-host, Freddie Bennett. Morning, love.
Good morning, Sharon Hartley. It is always a pleasure to see you. Shazza, as always, you are the ding to my dong. And I'm very excited to be here. I am very excited to be here today. You're right, the sun is shining. It's a wonderful day here in the future in New Zealand. Almost 1,000 days ago, life was very different. I'd be waking up every morning, hungover and full of anxiety and regret. But now, fast forward 992-ish Ooh. Days, I'm sat here talking to you, check this out, with my cafetiere of coffee, no less.
How life has changed.
Yes, so it was all a tale of redemption for me, and be able to stop drinking, start living the life I wanted to live, and I haven't looked back since. And obviously the highlight of that has been meeting all of our wonderful guests on this wonderful podcast and doing it every week with Shazza and Ben. And when I say doing it, I do mean recording the podcast, obviously. I'm going to stop talking now.
Well done. Thank you, Freddie. You never, ever let us down, do you? Ever. Every single time. Glorious to see you. You are looking fresh, AF. We've also got Background Ben, no longer in the background. He's very alcohol-free. He's just hit a big milestone. And it's really good to see, Ben, that your skin's cleared up, love. You were looking like a bit of a teen last week.
It's getting there. I was having a stressful period at work. And honestly, like you give up alcohol and you think, my hair's going to be shiny, my skin's going to be fabulous, I'm going to drop all this weight. It came back like I was like a teenager. I had the face at like so many spots. And every day I was like, I'm going to get on top of this. And I wake up the next day, there's another, you know, you get rid of one and then two appear. Anyway, that's about my skincare routine. Yeah, don't need that. My name is Ben. I'm the producer of this podcast and I am over 500 days alcohol free now. I'm the newest of all of us. But yeah, I didn't have a huge problem with alcohol. It wasn't until after I stopped that I realised that actually it was more of a negative impact on my life than I thought it was having at the time that I was actually drinking. I was originally going to do 3 months, but then got there and thought, this feels good, let's do 6. Then went, oh, go on, fuck it, let's do 12. Excuse my French, we can swear on this podcast, Adam, it's fine. Yeah, to drop the odd F-bomb here and there. Not the C-bomb, not the C-bomb. Never the C-bomb. But look, long story short, I gave up booze over 500 days ago. I've never felt better and I love it and I never want to drink again. I was saying just before this recording, I'm never going to have a hangover again. And that feeling is fantastic. I love that. But I also want to say thank you to everyone who did a little Instagram post on 500 days. And I don't do loads on Instagram, but obviously I wanted to talk about that because I wanted to promote the podcast. And, you know, 500 days is a good milestone. The amount of messages I've had from people going, oh, mate, what was that? Like on WhatsApp and stuff. What was that podcast you mentioned on Instagram the other day that you listened to when to give up booze? I was like, actually, I produced it. It's called
Excuse me.
But the amount of people that come out of the woodwork is unbelievable. Like so many people right at this very instance are sober curious. So many people are thinking and reevaluating their own relationships with alcohol. And these are people who aren't doing it because they're currently looking at or facing a rock bottom, but they're doing it because they just want their life to be better. And I think that's great and it's wonderful. And anyway, happy to be here. Skin's cleared up. Got a great guest. Back to you, Shaz.
Back to you in the studio. Enough about my skin. Really made me chuckle. We're so slick, aren't we? We really are. This podcast is all about the guests. And we've just spoken to so many inspirational people over the last 18 months, from the big wigs in the alcohol-free world to alcohol-free influencers. But particular favourites of mine are people who, don't take this the wrong way, this is going horribly wrong before we've even started, ordinary people with extraordinary stories to share. And when our guest got in touch with us, he's called Adam Smith. Adam sent me an email and I've got it in front of me again, Adam, and well, I don't want to give too much away. I don't want to start telling your story on your behalf. I read your email and I thought Adam needs to come on the pod and share his story with our listener because it's really, really important. It gives us great pleasure to introduce Adam Smith. Welcome to the chaos, Adam, that is over the influence.
Thank you for having me. I'm just delighted to be here talking about Freddie's dong. I didn't think that was going to be happening on Monday.
Many are called, but few are chosen, Adam. Few are chosen.
Oh, I love it. Great
it
to
happens
be here.
Most Mondays, yeah. Adam. We don't know how, but it does. And yet here we are, still
here we
talking.
Are.
It's a pleasure to have you here. In the style of Blind Date, you might not be old enough to remember that. Just tell us a bit about you. Who are you and where are you from?
Oh, firstly, I'm definitely old enough to remember Blind Date. So I'm Adam. I'm from Leeds. Well, I live in Leeds now, but I was born in a little town called Harrogate, which is a beautiful little place. Probably seen the sparkling or still water advertised everywhere, and it's known for Betty's and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
But yeah, very, it's a beautiful town, but it's very same old. So it's a little bit like EastEnders in a sense. Everyone knows each other's business and all that kind of stuff. So I decided to move out, I don't know, a few times really from that sort of small town mindset. And that's not a knock on it at all. It's just I wanted to explore something else. So I took the daring move 20 miles down the road. I know what you're thinking, you crazy bastard. So yeah, it's just it's just worlds apart. Living in a city is brilliant. So and then I was there for about 3 or 4 years and here we are. So yeah, now I'm a life coach that specializes in helping people get their mind right and rewire their thoughts, everything from childhood trauma to habit creation, morning routine, improving relationships and communication style with their partner, you know, you name it. So I've had this obsession with people my whole life and now I get to do it for a profession. So yeah, I'm delighted and I love doing it.
Wonderful. You can tell by the big smile on your face. I'm going to ask you a really personal question now. Sure. Adam, how old are you?
I am 33.
Very young. Yeah. Same age as Ben.
How's your skin? Doing all right?
Yeah, it's doing all right, mate. Yeah, a bit blotchy fresh last week, but yeah, it's the ring light over here that's doing me favours. So yeah,
it'll be full. Gets worse.
Yeah, don't be fooled.
Kids, I don't know. I remember those days.
The youth of today, Freddie.
Yeah, I know. I know. They're so positive, aren't they? Like, they haven't been worn down by life yet, like you and me.
There's time yet.
Yeah, only is about 4 years ago that I looked 35. You know, it's the not drinking and having. I had an awful Ricky Gervais style beard for years. It was terrible.
Did you really?
Oh yeah, it was awful. You know, when you look at the difference in some of my photos, I'll try to get one up for you now. It's it could be a different person. It's shocking, really.
Wow. Bloody hell.
Sober suits you, Adam. Sober suits you.
Yeah. You've definitely had a glow up.
Yeah, I said to my friends, why did no one tell me what was going on? Why did no one let me know this was happening? So, it was bad times, but we're on the other side of it now, which is great.
Fantastic. Well, you are looking fresh-faced, and we need to get to know you a bit better, find out a little bit more about your story. So am I right in saying that you're about 15, 16 months alcohol-free now?
Yeah, it's around that. To be honest, I don't know the actual date that I stopped. I know that it was around August last year, though, because we went away to the Lake District when we came back. I went to where my partner, and I was just like, I just don't really fancy anything, you know. When you went into the bar, I was like, I don't really want to drink, I'm just doing it for the sake of it. So I took a 30-day break, which turned into 60, 90, you know, and then it just kept building from there. And then, you know, I'm quite driven and stubborn, so when it got to 6 months, I was like, I'm doing a year. I'm getting to that year mark, and now it's just, you know, who knows.
You sound just like Ben and Freddie, so we knew you would fit in really well on the podcast. Can we rewind, Adam?
Sure.
As far back as you are happy to go, just talk us through, you know, your drinking days and what led you to where you are now, because it's not always been as positive for you, has it?
Oh my God, no. It was when it was bad, it was really bad. When I think probably earliest memory of drinking was 14 or 15 in the park with a bottle of vodka with your mates and all that kind of stuff. I remember we went away on a holiday, on a family holiday, and I had 6 pints. I'd never really drank beer before in that excess. And I just remember it was like a scene out of The Exorcist, you know, horrific. And I just remember that I knew then at 16, I never want to feel like this ever again. But obviously the bravado, the mask we wear, the societal normities of consuming X amount of alcohol, otherwise you're ostracized from you're in a circle, all came to play, and I stuck with it. And I was very much the Jack Daniels and Coke and pint kind of guy until about 17, 18. I used to work for my dad doing plumbing and heating because academia was not for me, not through lack of intelligence, but I've got dyspraxia. So it's basically like a learning difficulty and an attention deficit. I wasn't diagnosed with that until I was 15 years old. So I didn't understand why I was so disruptive and why I just couldn't retain information. But essentially, it's you lose your place on the blackboard. So when you look down, you look up, you look down, you look up, all the words have just like almost disappeared in a sense. So it wasn't for the want of trying. It was just very frustrating. So I'm banging my head against the wall and the teachers think I'm just disrupting people because I'm a little shit, which wasn't the case. And I'd go home frustrated. I'd get, you know, shouted at home for not paying attention at school and then vice versa. But it's very easy for me to do this. I did a lot of this through my 20s and even up until about a year or so ago, so I did proper work on myself and realized the common denominator in all my problems was, in fact, me. What a revelation. So, school was very, very challenging. Very, very challenging for me. And I got to about 15 or 16. I saw my dad had a successful plumbing and heating business. So I was like, I'm just going to do that. It's fine. I'll take over that. Not thinking that I saw all the holidays and the nice cars, but I didn't see the 80-hour weeks he was doing to do that, you know. And I just sort of gave up on school and education and went to go work for him. Lasted about a year and a half. 6'5", 18-stone dyspraxic plumber isn't really a good combination. So that didn't work out very well at all. And I just left and I was like, I need a job. And I fell in love with hospitality instantaneously because it was late nights, it was loud, it was fun, it was daft, it was all the rest in between. It was just like having a night out, but getting paid for it. But with that came a lot of alcohol, obviously, you know, and you're surrounded by the temptation, not only when you're working, but you've got to go out for after work beers, right? You can't just, you know, because you need a nightcap, because we all know how great alcohol is for sleep. So off we went, 4 or 5 in the morning and repeat. And that was my life for a couple of years. I moved to Headingley, which is a famous town for something called the Otley Run, which has got 18 to 20 bars, and you go down there and drink in every bar and get absolutely obliterated in fancy dress. And I managed the main bar on that strip, and that was for 2 or 3 years. And I was 21 at the time, managing a team of 70 people. I was just completely brainwashed by the girls, the late nights, the free-flowing booze, and thinking people were your best mate when they weren't, because they were just there for free drinks and queue jump and you name it. So got to about 24, 25, and I knew this just wasn't for me anymore. But I kept doing it. Didn't stop, just kept doing it. Kept drinking, kept going out, kept waking up, regretting it and everything. And it just got worse and worse. And fast forward to about when I was 28, I got the move of my life and career-wise. I got a promotion and I got to open an incredible venue in Leeds, managing a team of 100-plus staff, 3-piece suit every day, blah, blah, blah. I thought, this is it. You know, I've proved all those teachers wrong. I'm earning a better salary than them. Now I thought I was, you know, the man. And I was in a relationship at the time, and we were together for probably about a year and a half at this point. Did the first 9 months. It got to December, and because it was so big and because it was so busy all the time, staff started leaving, and we were left with, we needed probably 50 staff to make it operational, and we had about 30 or 40 over the Christmas period. And I was working 8 a.m. till midnight throughout the whole of December. The only way I knew what day it was by looking at my phone, because I just didn't have a clue anymore. I didn't know what was going on. So I drank to give me energy in my warped mind. I drank to forget. I drank to de-stress. I drank to have a good time. Everything was related around drink. And then obviously I'm tired. So what do I need as a pick-me-up? Oh, I'll do some cocaine as well. That'll sort me out. That'll give me the energy that I require, right? Not water. So cocaine and alcohol sounds like a great cocktail. So I wasn't sleeping, because I was so worried about work. I had insomnia, which led to unbelievable stress, and which obviously led to my relationship suffering. You know, my partner was in recruitment working 50, 60 hour weeks, and I just wasn't there. I was there at bedtime and I was gone before she woke up. It was just an absolute nightmare. My mum and dad said that I was turned into a person they didn't like anymore, which hurt like you wouldn't believe. I was missing weddings and birthdays and whatever. It was just an absolute nightmare. And I remember 3 days before Christmas Eve, and my area manager comes in and I had a breakdown in front of him. I mean, I was just exhausted. And I just said, I don't know what to do. I'm literally running on empty. And in city centre, well, in Leeds in particular, like the actual Christmas week is actually quite quiet because there's a lot of towns surrounding Leeds. So everyone goes home to see the family. So city centre's dead. I didn't need to be there. He said, look, take 4 or 5 days off. I was like, right. So I went to the doctor, and, you know, the thing that I don't like about doctors is it's like, oh, are you tired? Yeah. Are you stressed? Yeah. Are you this? Yeah. Oh, you've got depression. It's like, I didn't. I was doing depression with my behaviors, which I'll touch on in a second. So I didn't have anything chemically wrong with me. I was just making poor choice after poor choice and blaming everybody else apart from myself. So I came back on New Year's Eve. That Christmas period was awful because I'd had an argument with my partner. We probably knew it was coming to an end, but he couldn't admit it. And who wants to break up at Christmas time, right? We'll book holidays. We'll do this. Next year's our year. You'll see. You'll all see. It wasn't. So I went back way too soon. New Year's Eve got absolutely smashed. I was at work the next morning on New Year's Day. I was still pretty drunk, to be honest. Didn't know what was going on. It got to about 3rd or 4th of January, and I had a big argument with my partner, like big argument. My lecture, because I need a break. I was like, okay, well, you know, Ross and Rachel style, let's have the break, all right? Let's just humor it, and you go to your friends for a week and I'll work for a week and whatever. And I thought, it's going to be fine. We're going to work everything out. It'll be okay. We just need a bit of space. And work got even worse. And I went to the doctor, said, we're signing you off with stress. Went home, cleaned the house, sorted myself out, prepped my meals. I was like, right, come on, eyes on the prize now. Your partner's coming home in 3 days. Get ready. Bought the flowers, got dressed up. Here we go. Saw the car pulling in. And then it stopped in the estate. And I was like, I know that's a friend's car that she's been staying at. Waiting in the car. 15 minutes go by. 20 minutes go by. I'm thinking, what the hell's going on? She gets out. By this time, we're together like 4 years. Walks in. I can't do this anymore. I've got to go. I'm so sorry. I love you, but this is over. Like that. And just left. It was like someone, I couldn't even get my words out. I was literally on my knees, like I couldn't breathe because it was almost like having a panic attack because it just was so unexpected and so sudden. Anyway, so that was just, at the time, world was ending around me. Fast forward a week, I'm in a little bit of recovery. She agrees to meet me. We'll talk it out. We'll sort it out. So again, did everything I could to fix myself and what little time I had. Met up with me. I've decided, still no. Anyway, so fast forward a few more days, and my auntie had been ill for a number of years and she had a brain hemorrhage and passed away. I was like, okay, so stockpiling stuff now, work, relationship, family, right? 2 days later, my uncle passed away from a different part of my family. He's had a heart attack and a stroke, dead, like fit, bare health and 60 years old. I was like, right, two family members down and my relationship's just ended. And in 3 days' time, I've got to go back to that hellhole at work. Not literally in the environment, but up here it was, in my mind it was. So I thought this was rock bottom. So I thought, what's the answer? I know, keep drinking, all right? That'll solve the problem. And there was a bar job that came available running my favourite bar in Leeds, Call Lane. It's a very famous street in the north for... You go down there and you get smashed. And I mean, next level, you know, like Call Lane will have your life kind of vibe, right? But this bar is incredible. It's the best bar in the world, in my view. And I walked down there one evening and I get speaking to the general manager, who's a good friend of mine, who just said, I need to speak to you. We want you to take over. I was like, oh my God, amazing. So fast forward 2 weeks, got my dream job. I was like, things are looking up. Finally, I've lost three family members, my girlfriend, whatever. But you know what? Let's bury that hatchet. I didn't bury anything. I was just wearing a mask the entire time. I was still damaged beyond repair inside and mentally. I still wasn't sleeping at night. I was still crying myself to sleep most evenings and all the rest of it. It got to a point, and I don't tell you this to brag, and I know, you know, it's the right audience not to do that anyway, but I was drinking up to a bottle and a half of whiskey while working and being functional. That's how bad it was. Plus beers, plus gin and tonics, plus you name it. So if my shift pattern was 5 p.m. till 5 a.m., I would be consuming the best part of two bottles of spirit on a Saturday night while working, while counting money, while dealing with customers and complaints and X, Y, and Z. So, you know, again, this led to more drugs, more one-night stands, more stupid mistakes, et cetera, et cetera. And I had a couple of what I like to call episodes, really, where I was like, this must be rock bottom now. So anyway, I started going to therapy. I was like, I need to unpack all this. But I'd still not repaired from the damage done by my ex-partner. So most of the conversation was just about her. And I found myself saying the same thing over and over again, just not getting over it. Anyway, it got to about September time. I was just getting ready for work and my best friend rang me. And he just said, because he used to call me Smithy. He's just like, Smithy. I was like, yeah. He's like, my dad's dead. I was like, what? He's like, my dad's dead. So what do you mean your dad's dead? He's like, he had a heart attack. He's dead. Like he was just saying it so matter of fact, like I'm saying it to you now. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, last night he had a heart attack and he's dead. Like, what? This can't be real. What's going on? And this guy was like a second dad to me. You know, I mean, I've known him for years and this is my best friend, like my brother. And again, 54 years old or something. Complete fit, bit of health, everything. I was like, I don't understand this. And I sort of suppressed it for about a week or two until, you know, the funeral, because it took ages because they were like, this isn't normal. So post-mortem took longer than usual. Turn up at the funeral. And it was just like, I was looking for him. I was so in denial. I was like, where is he? Where's Paul? So the wake is a 5-minute walk from the church, and my mum and dad's house is a 5-minute walk from there. So I was just drinking and drinking and drinking. And, but people didn't even know that he wasn't even touching the sides. So I was about 10 pints in at this point. So I'd never realized what the common denominator here was. Me and alcohol for all these problems, apart from obviously the unexpected deaths that had nothing to do with those things. But I thought, my reaction is still my decision. I can either let all this define me or I can work at it. But at the time, I didn't know what was going on. So I've just drank 10 pints at the wake in the space of 2 hours. And I walked down to my dad's and I was like, look, I need to go. And the only reason why I left was because I didn't want to make it about me. That's how bad my mental health was at the time. I was close to a breakdown at someone's funeral when I see a crying widow and all I can think of is me. That's how bad it was, because it just consumed me. So I walked down to my mum and dad's, and I remember just hugging my mum. In my mind, I'm saying, this is the last time I'm going to hug my mum, because I'm going to kill myself. I couldn't do it anymore. I was in so much pain, I had no idea where to go next. So I picked the bridge. I was like, if I drive into this bridge at a high enough speed, it's going to kill me instantly without hurting anybody else. I didn't want to cause harm to anyone else. I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want anyone to find me. I just wanted to do it in the way that made sense to me. So I remember as I was hugging my mom and I was crying, she thought I was crying because of the funeral. I was crying because I thought it's the last time I'm going to have a chance to touch or speak to my mom. So off I go in the car. Again, relatively steady driving, considering I'm 10 pints in, because I was so used to drinking that much alcohol at the time. And I get up to a really high speed and I'm going and I'm going and I'm going. And then my phone rings and it just pops up on the screen, mom. And I was like, oh God, God, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? I just pressed answer and she just went, Adam. I was like, yeah. And it was like, boom. As soon as I heard her voice, I was like, shit. And she's like, you've left your wallet at home. Do you want me to drop it off for you? So I slammed the brake on the car, spun out of control. And I just pulled up in the near lay-by and I just sobbed. And I mean, it was like someone had poured 5 litres of water over my head, sobbed. My shirt was wringing wet through. I sat there for about an hour. And what happened, it was almost this like out-of-body experience. I'm not religious and I'm not a spiritual person, but this was something beyond anything that I've ever experienced in my life before. As soon as I heard a voice, I started to practice gratitude instantly in my head. I was like, how lucky am I that I've got a mom that loves me? How lucky am I that my parents are still married? How lucky am I I've still got my brother and his wife and the kids and my friends, and I've got my health and I've got this and I've got that? Because I knew that that was rock bottom. That was it for me. But rock bottom is also a great foundation on which to build, because it can't get worse. And I didn't want to die. I just wanted the pain to end. I wanted my life as I knew it to end. I didn't want to cause that pain and suffering to my parents or to my friends or anybody else. I just wanted my pain to stop. And that's the thing that people don't realize. When you are that close to ending your own life, that's the emotion you feel. There's a guy that goes around Australia who's a motivational speaker now. He jumped off the Sydney Harbour Bridge and he lived to tell the tale. And he said, as soon as my foot left that bridge, I regretted it instantly. Because he said the same thing. I wanted to be free of pain. I didn't want to be free of life. And that's the big thing for people that are listening, is that if you are going through a tough time right now, it has not come to stay. It has come to pass. If you want it to, you've got a decision to make. And I knew that no one was going to come save me. I had to sort this problem out myself. I knew it was going to be a long, hard road. But when I got to that point, I was like, I can't do this anymore. So it wasn't even then that I stopped drinking. It was, you know, like I say, it got to the lockdown and I needed to reassess a few things. I was 130 kilos working in a job that I despised, knowing that I've got so much more to offer the world. And lockdown was the best thing that ever happened to me. And I don't say that lightly, because I know people lost a lot. They lost loved ones, they lost businesses, all sorts. But for me, it was the best thing that ever happened in my life. I'd had my fair share of crap. This was the best bit. Time to hit the pause button, refocus and realign with what's important to me. And It was when I came back from a trip away with my partner, thought, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm sick and tired of feeling like shit. And I'm sick of poisoning myself, and I'm sick of kidding myself. Because the one question that changed everything for me around alcohol, oh, what's wrong with one beer? What's right with one beer? You tell me how one beer improves any element of your life and I'll listen, but you're lying to yourself. And that was when I realized, this is it now. That was my journey with it. And I'm done with it now. I don't demonize anyone for drinking it. I worked with it for 14 years. It ended relationships. It ended all sorts. But now I'm using my position as a teacher. I'm not a victim. I'm a teacher now. And if I can help other people take that break, or, you know, guide them on that journey, that's exactly what I'm going to do, because they need to learn this information.
Adam, thank you for sharing that. And I'm really glad that your mum made that phone call at that time. It's incredible. Mums are just brilliant, aren't they? Mm. Intuitive.
Thank you, Adam. Like, there's so much of that story that I can relate to, that I, you know, my heart goes out to you. I was kind of nodding my head as you were saying things and thinking, yeah, I definitely recognise that, and I definitely recognise that and everything else. My question for you, and maybe people that are listening have had a similar question, and this may be with alcohol or maybe something else in people's lives that they want to change, but I think we've all been in that position where we've said, I'm not happy with this element of my life right now. I'm at rock bottom. I want to change. I know something needs to be different. But then almost immediately our brain kicks in and it says, you know, oh yes, but you need this job, or you need this relationship, or there's this, or there's that. There's always something that kicks in that tells ourselves, no matter how badly you want to change, there's a reason why you can't change right now. How do people get over that? How do people still keep moving forward when they desperately want a change, but they can't see how to make it happen?
It's a very fixed mindset that I see every day with, I help people with now. You know, it's an old adage, but the words that follow I am are often very true. You know, I am an alcoholic, and that's why I hate AA. I'm an alcoholic. For you just repeat that same sentence for the rest of your life. Like, how destructive is that? You know, it's my view on it. Not knocking people that do AA or anything, but it's just not for me. So if you're saying that, you know, I'm not capable of change, I just can't lose weight, I've done everything. It's like, you haven't done everything. You've done the same thing three times over and expect a different outcome every single time. So the first thing is, change. You need to be honest with yourself. And the main method that I use is that you have to deal with the reality of the situation. So that's all we have, is the reality. And then don't look at it for worse than it is. Look at it for what it is. And what it is might still not be very good. So deal with the reality of the situation. Let's say with alcohol, the reality was I was overconsuming, I was miserable, I was suicidal. Looking at it for worse than it is, I'm a loser, I don't deserve, you know, I shouldn't be living, I'm this, I'm that, I'm a horrible person. For what it is, I was overconsuming too much alcohol and I needed to stop. But eventually you have to look at things for better than it is, because otherwise you're just going to be stuck in what it is your whole life, and what it is isn't great either. So if you can follow those four steps, deal with the reality, don't look at it for worse than it is, look at it for what it is, and then look at it for better than it is to create that compelling future, that should give you an idea of the process that needs to be followed in order to make lasting change.
Adam, I'm interested to talk to you about rock bottoms, because I'm not sure how much of the podcast you've heard before, but I didn't have a rock bottom. But I also say that I didn't have a problem with alcohol in terms of, I wasn't an alcoholic when I decided to stop drinking. I also say that give me another 5 years and the way that I was drinking, who knows where it could have ended. Your story, it's one that we hear a lot. Obviously, there's elements, of course, that are different. But what I mean by that, it's the slippery slope thing. You got a job when you're a young man. That job was in the midst of bars, restaurants, drinking culture. You were running on empty. You started making poor choices. You were signed off with stress. Your relationship, these are all things that happen to people every single day. And it led to you driving a car really fast at a bridge. And it's shocking that it is. You can see the chain of events that happened, and it's an unfortunate series of events, really, isn't it? But it just, these things build up and build up and build up and build up and build up. I'm really interested in how do we catch people before rock bottom? You said rock bottom's a great foundation for which to build, and I totally agree with that. But how do we get into people's consciousness before they get to that point? If you could have been caught, if you were on that slippery slope, and actually you change your relationship with alcohol at the time that you were signed off with stress, for example, would that have made a difference? Or did you need to get to that rock bottom for you to change that relationship?
Yeah, it's such a great question. You know, I almost accidentally came up with a phrase the other day talking to a client when I said, be the voice that you wish you heard. And that, you know, as soon as I said it, I was like, oh, I need to write that one down. I like that one. because I, you know, I needed someone to, you know, I had family, I had friends, I had, you know, you name it. People did try, you know, not their utmost in a sense, but again, that's me pointing the finger. I think that there's also another phrase which I came across this year, which is, have you had enough pain then? You know, someone was asked that question, who's a good friend of mine, when he was suicidal, drug addict, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, have you had enough pain then? He was like, what? He's like, how dare you ask me that question? He's like, no, seriously, have you had enough pain yet? Because if you haven't, you're not going to change. So we see it all the time, people that we speak to. You just don't understand how bad my life is, Adam. I'm 5 stone overweight, Adam. My wife's going to leave me, Adam. Okay, no problem. We talk them through everything and we outline what it is that they need to change and everything else. And then we get to talking about the cost of the program and you name it. And it's, yeah, yeah, obviously I need to think about it. It's like, okay, what they're really saying is I haven't had enough pain yet, or I'm not capable of making change. That's the biggest fear factor, I think, is, you know, there's a 5-stage process, essentially. I'll run through it very quickly. So you need to be painfully aware that there's a problem or you're never going to change. And the pain needs to be real, because the pain of a hangover isn't outweighed by the pleasure of going on another night out with your friends and doing it all over again. But the pain of your wife threatening to leave you if you don't sort out your alcohol problem, that's pretty big, which I think most people would respond to. Not always, but most people. Number two, you need to decide that there has to be a change made. So again, it might be, right, that's it. All the alcohol's gone, out of the house, no more. It's like, fine, okay, that's a decision. But just deciding to do it doesn't do anything. Like, look at me now deciding to do star jumps. Nothing happens, right? So the next stage is you have to get a strategy. So what's your strategy? Some people, oh, I'm just going to try a break from alcohol. But what's the strategy? Have you read books on it? Have you got an accountability group? Have you, you know, have you listened to podcasts? Have you watched YouTube videos? No, I'm just going to see how I get on. Well, that's going to end terribly. So you need a strategy. Number four, you need to be accountable to someone. So that would ideally be a coach, but if not, it could be a friend. You might do it together. You might do couch to 5K, change the focus. Rather than saying, I can't drink, say, I get to go running now, to flip it around and flip the psychology. And then number five is take massive action and just throw yourself into it and just keep going and know your desired outcome, whatever that desired outcome might be. It might be never drinking again. It might be losing 10 pounds. It might be whatever. And then just keep switching the method in order to achieve your desired outcome. It's not easy. It's really not easy, but it is very, very, very simple by following certain methods. So, yeah, I think it's, I think that you don't necessarily have to hit the rock bottom, but I really do feel like it needs to hit a massive pain point, unfortunately, in order to change for most people. Most people that I've spoken to have got to that stage where they've realized now is enough and I need to move on.
Adam, we have got a few community members who are watching this recording online. It's always wonderful to have them because they get to see behind the scenes Over the Influence. And of course, they get to meet you as well, which is fabulous. Ali has put a question in the chat box and she says, I'd like to know what tools Adam used when he actually quit drinking. How did you do it, Adam?
So the first thing is get rid of it out of your environment. So just pour all the alcohol away. And some people go, isn't that a waste of money? It's like, well, it's all going to end up in the sewer anyway. So you may as well just avoid putting it down your gullet and affecting all your vital organs. So rid yourself of that. If you're trying, you know, I say it all the time, if you're trying to lose weight, don't go to McDonald's. The environment side of it is big. So that's the first stage, is get rid of it. Second one is find a like-minded community, similar to what you're in right now, of people that are all working towards the common goal. Number three, avoid bars for a bit, not forever, because you have to put yourself in that environment again. Number four, realize what your triggers are around your habits. It might be the opening the bottle of the wine, pouring it in the wine glass and going, ah. It might be opening the fridge door, opening the bottle of beer. Use a non-alcoholic alternative. Now, obviously, you know, unless you're I don't know the amount you're consuming right now, but I'm assuming it's not to a dangerous, you know, point. So you'll be fine in the sense of having any repercussions from cutting out completely. So get a non-alcoholic alternative. And then number five would be to focus on something different, i.e. what I said earlier, go for a run, join a fitness club, go play badminton, whatever your thing is. Find a hobby to focus on rather than not drinking. Oh, I get to go running. I get to go meet Jill. I get to go whatever, you know? Those are my key things that help me.
I was going to say, it's crazy how much that we feel shackled by alcohol, that it's so wrapped up in our jobs in particular and in our identities, because it sounds like what you were saying, Adam, you were recognising that obviously your mental health was what it's asked. You were hitting rock bottom, but being in that environment, and that's what I've been in as well, thinking I can't, how could I think about doing a different job which didn't involve alcohol? Like, that would be impossible because this is who I am, this is how I make my money and everything else. But it's about helping people to realise that there is a future for everyone, and it might not be the future that they envision, but it's about understanding that if you take a step away from a situation that you're not happy with, where you're drinking too much, where your mental health is suffering, there always is an alternative. And that's why we've always got a choice. And it sounds like that's how it was for you when you finally moved away from the hospitality industry and went into the new career, that I imagine that you couldn't have. Yeah. If someone had said to you 5 years ago, you're not going to be in bars, you're going to be a life coach or however it works, then I imagine it must feel totally different for you.
Yeah, the simplest way I can describe it to anyone is, you know, it's like the film Limitless, where now you can see. You know, I was once blind and now I can see. It was that kind of the feeling to it, you know, of just having full clarity. Because some of the benefits people don't talk about, little things like your meals are prepped, your clothes are ironed, you don't wake up hungover anymore. You don't wake up feeling like, oh my God, what did I do last night anymore? You don't have that unnecessary anxiety. We all have anxiety in very different ways and, you know, very different levels, but why cause any more? You know, and just by not drinking, that cuts out a lot of that, of what did I do, what did I say, who did I say it to. So yeah, getting rid of that from my life has just literally been the single best decision I've ever made. And like I said, I don't look at it as missing out on stuff. I look at it as getting to do stuff now. And, you know, yeah, the only drink I miss really is Guinness, but they've got a 0% Guinness now. So brilliant, right? And there's alternatives for just about everything else. I've not been sold a non-alcoholic wine just yet, but non-alcoholic beers taste exactly, no, not for me. The non-alcoholic beers taste great. There's non-alcoholic spirits now. It's unbelievable what's out there. It's great. So you can just have all the fun, spend a tenth of what you would before, and you can drive home at the end. It's great.
It's your story's really inspiring. We use this word a lot, and it's true. And because you're an ordinary bloke that has been to rock bottom, but your story just shows that there absolutely is another way, and it's not easy. Adam, is it? It's not easy, and it takes work, but there is another way. And once you've pulled yourself back out of that hole from where you were, it's incredible. And It's really inspiring, in particular to young men. You know, there were so many young men in the 30s, late 20s, 30s, you know, 40s, many, many young men. But I think so many don't think there's another way, that this is how it has to be. It's not. There is another way. And I think you're just a shining example of that. So thank you for sharing really honestly with us on the pod.
I've loved it. It's great. It's, you know, another phrase. I love my sayings and my phrases, but you hear a lot of them in the coaching space. But turn your mess into a message. You know, when I heard that, I was like, oh, shit. It's like that penny drop moment. Yeah, I need to spread this now, and I need to reach out to who I can to try. There might be one thing that resonates with one person one time, you know, and I don't want to sound cliche or cringy, but that is genuinely what this is for, you know, and you guys are doing an awesome job as well. You know, I've looked at so much of your content, and just it's just incredible, because now more than ever, the younger generation are changing. This next generation, some people call it soft and some people call it snowflake and some people call it weak. I call it open-minded. I call it forward thinking. I call it, you know, slightly rebellious, but in a such a charming way, you know, and not in every aspect, obviously, because everyone has the faults. But at the same time, you know, this now is the highest percentage of people that are avoiding alcohol from 16 to 24. I think it's like nearly 30% right now. It's crazy. Those numbers are crazy. It's amazing. So, yeah, by having the platform that you guys provide, that is only going to help people and be the, you know, I love the over the influence thing as well, because it's influencing people in such a different way, which is so refreshing to see.
We get so bloody excited about the whole thing. It's ridiculous. And none of us were ever supposed to be here. You know, we've all sort of ended up being alcohol free completely by accident because it got better. You know, Ben, just like you, Adam, oh, I'll try 30. Oh, go on, I'll try 60. Shit, I'm gonna have to do 90 now. God, it's good. I'm gonna go for the year. And it just keeps going and going. But Freddie's nearly 1,000 days. I'm doing 3 years and beyond. See, I'm getting excited again. I get all flummoxed when I start talking about how good it is. But you have to give yourself a chance. So if somebody's listening now, a young man that is maybe working in the bars, that is out caning it every weekend, whoever it might be, briefly, what would you say? What's your nugget to take away from this?
Just take a 30-day break. That's it. Don't declare you're never going to drink again or anything like that. Just take a 30-day break and see how you feel. And if your life hasn't improved in any area, then I'll be absolutely shocked, because that's the biggest thing that's got me through. I just say every day, I'm not drinking today. That's it. And the days add up.
And I need to say it. I wasn't going to say it, but I do, you know, this podcast is all about kind of opening up the conversation around it. Like, I respect so much of what you said, and I agree with so much of what you said, the planning and the structure, and it's difficult. You've got to do it and you've got to immerse yourself in everything else. I'd love to reinforce the message that take that 30-day break, even if you're not at a point. It upset me a bit earlier, Adam, when he said that you feel like someone needs to feel pain before they make a change here. And I need to go away and think about that more. And that's why I love this podcast, because I'm now going to think about this all week, and I'm going to think back to 500 days ago and think, actually, where was I? You know, really try and analyse the point that I was at. But I really want to say, you don't, for me, I don't want people to wait until they're really feeling the pain of it. I want everyone to give 30 days. In fact, I want everyone to give 100 days a go. That's our magic number here at Over the Influence. I want everyone to give it a go, because I think it doesn't matter where you are, how bad or how good your relationship with alcohol might be. You know, I think everybody will see benefits if they take that break. So sorry, I'm not disagreeing with you.
No,
it's something I want to take away and think more about. But I'm glad that we've met, Adam. I think we've got a lot of similarities between us, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just an opinion
everyone
game.
Should take that break.
Yeah, it's just a game of opinions, mate. That's all, you know, and it's just the patterns from what I've seen in the short time, in the 18 months I've done coaching, unfortunately, the pattern lends itself to that. I'm like you, mate. I'm an empath, and I love people, and I hate seeing people struggle. I hate it. And when you can see it going. It's like, come on. And you just try and you try. And yeah, I would never want anyone to get close to the pain I was feeling. So, because rock bottom is subjective. It's all subjective. It's relevant to your life right now. But yeah, I would love to see everyone take a break if they could. It's just unfortunate that most people, unfortunately, get to that point and it's like, oh, that could have been so easily avoided. And I wish I had it sooner.
It's, I know we need to wrap this up, but one more thing from me. I didn't realise in the thick of my drinking that I actually had a problem. Because you don't, do you? You just keep ploughing on and thinking this is perfectly normal because everybody else does it. And if I didn't do it, I'd stand out like a sore ass and I could have possibly. And it was only until I stopped and now look back and I go, oh, my God. Yeah, that really did creep up and bite me on the arse. It's so insipid. So as Ben said, no rock bottom, no one defining moment. But for me, maybe 300 smaller moments. You know, that all add up to, actually, think I might just try this now. But the scale of alcohol is so vast. And one glass can be too much for somebody. And 1,000 glasses can be too much for somebody else. It is such an interesting conversation. And one we could talk about for probably another 6 hours, Adam. However, we are already. We're over time. So Adam, thank you for chatting to us so honestly. It's much, much appreciated. And thank you for covering everything. As you said, nothing was off bounds today. And we hugely appreciate that. It is incredible to see where you are now. You are now helping others, coaching others, helping people deal with issues that you may have experienced yourselves. Where can people find a little bit more about what you do, Adam?
On probably Instagram is probably the best way. So we've got A-Game Consultancy, which is the three Adams, which is the business from my other two business partners. And then A.Smith_coaching on Instagram. So I do daily stories on there about how to get your mind right in various different ways. We've also got a Facebook group, which is called Bring Your A-Game. So if you guys go onto Facebook and type that in the search bar, Bring Your A-Game, it's got 500 plus members in, just lovely, amazing, inspiring people. No negative vibes, no nothing. It's just everyone lifting each other up every day. And then our website's www.agameconsultancy.com. And that's it.
Amazing. Thank you. Before you go, what are you doing for Christmas? What plans have you got?
Oh, so... we're going to get smashed on... No, we're going
to... No!
No! We're going to... we're just having family rounds, so it's going to be probably the week before Christmas is a mega family party. It's going to be about 17 or 18 of us. And then Christmas Day is just going to be me, my partner, my parents, and the two little dogs. So, yeah, it's going to be great.
Amazing. Absolutely fantastic. Amazing. Adam, thank you so, so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. It's been great. Thanks guys.
Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you. Meet Ian.
Hi guys, I'm Ian. 370 something days alcohol free as of today. Love OTI, love Shaz, Ben and Freddie. Really speak my language. Find the Zoom calls really useful. It's really important, I think, to surround yourself with people who get it. And I think, unfortunately, in today's world, I think you can often feel like a bit of an outcast when you take the break and actually stop drinking. And therefore, it's really important to know that there's thousands of people like you out there who feel the same. Personally, I don't necessarily miss drinking, but I do sort of worry too much about what other people think. And I think, therefore, just to be able to sort of sound off with other people about how you feel about that and get a common sense response is just vital. So keep up the good work. I'll be staying close to everything that you do, and I'll speak to you all soon. Take care.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk and be part of the Sober Rebellion.